This is Aiden with Oddball Pilot. We're sitting down for our third question and answer period. Once again, I wandered over to the Aero Pilot House because they have more pilots here than we have at Ryanair at our pilot house. And their pilot house is pretty darn nice. So we're sitting down with the Aero crew, the first shift, second shift crew. I'm just not going to go through everybody's name. It's too complicated. And I've got my FO here too as well. And we're going to run through a series of questions that we've gotten on the on Oddball Pilot over the last few months. And we'll kind of get a group discussion going on what we feel answers are. Of course, we're not perfect, and we'll probably have different opinions, and we'll go from there. Sound good? Clint, you ready?
Good.
Ready!
If you hear us eating, we got some pizza here from Airport Pizza. Pretty fancy. So this question is actually very pertinent for people at Aero. Somebody's been flying in Alaska and Southeast for a while, and they're wondering what type of time Aero would like to see overall, and how much time would it take to bypass the SIC program in the Caravans. And this person has roughly 1,600 hours and about 1,000 hours PIC. Any thoughts?
In what aircraft?
Southeast, last probably 207, is my guess.
Probably be hard, maybe 2 months Two months SIC just to get familiar and then check down the 207.
Okay, so that's a good
it'd be
answer.
Pretty darn quick.
It'd be quick.
Probably has a chance of jumping right in.
Yeah, he probably does. He probably wouldn't even have to sit in the caravan at all.
Being over 1,500
in the past,
having Alaska time
in the past, even though I've seen it, the guy gets. He's high time, but they put him right seat for like one shift at least, and
just to get familiar. And it probably depends on needs to some degree too.
They've had some issues with people they put directly in to the 207 without getting the familiarization.
Right.
Okay,
it helps the process.
Let's probably try to figure out how to contact agents, the paperwork. It's just general operating procedures and how to.
Yeah,
they probably know how to fly the airplane, but it's the cool. What
That's
about
more
us,
what
TJ?
You're learning.
It's being in Bethel.
Yeah, you're just spoiled here in Nome now.
Nome is horrible.
So many mountains to hit.
Don't ever come to Nome.
There are a lot of mountains.
Turbulence here is just awful.
It is scary. Scary.
Nobody wants to fly in Nome.
It's dark and blizzardy.
So, TJ, what do you think... For Ryanair, we people do bypass our right seat. Most of our guys go right seat in the CASA, but I know we do bring people on occasionally who have 207 time in Alaska, usually at the base, so I think that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, most low-time guys will get right seat in the CASA right away.
Right.
But higher time, 800 and up probably, you'll probably get 207 right off the bat.
Okay, if you got a chance. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now my computer just turned off. Let's move on. Here's the next one. Yeah, Nome's a pretty sweet base. We do have pizza. There's lots of pizza in the villages, by the way. Unicleed has awesome pizza.
Deliver pizza.
Who's putting that out there?
Many pizzas a day.
I'm not going with names on these, but I figure some people probably don't want to be super public with what they're asking. But the main question that this person had is thoughts on aerobatic training and how it would help flying in Alaska and whether it would help.
I'd say don't waste money on that.
I would say nay.
I'm the same way.
Money on that.
Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of fun to do it, and it certainly helps your flying skills.
Right.
But it isn't really applicable to.
Mm-mm. It will tempt you to do barrel rolls in a 207, which is not a good idea.
Or a caravan.
Or a 406.
Or a 406. Or, yeah, we'll just leave it right there. So, if you
never have I, just for the record. Just because I said that doesn't mean...
The 406?
Yeah. I know I've heard of others. I'm not going to name names. But
I'll just keep my mouth shut.
Not I. So.
At any rate, if you do plan to do aerobatics, I would recommend taking some training because...
Oh, yeah. Aerobatics without training is a really bad idea.
You always end up in a split S. not that I would know. So, probably not worth it unless you had the money and the time. And I do know that the Fish and Wildlife guys, they get sent through aerobatic training. And these are placed down in Arizona for that.
I don't know if it's pertinent or not, but Callie got to go down there. He said it was fun. Yeah.
Just for kicks.
10 hours of aerobatic training, yeah. That's fun.
10 hours is a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. I think it was 10 hours. So, I would love to go do some aerobatic training, but I think it would be awesome, but I don't have the cash. So, onwards, and actually this was your question, Steve, and we could talk about it a little bit. Just sort of a general question, if you have a 135 certificate and you're a one airplane operator, kind of wondering what could be done with it and what the markets are, and maybe what the ultimate aircraft would be. I think that might, I don't know any more than you do. I do know you, and same stuff that you would know, you can do aerial photography stuff. Mm-hmm. You can get into some like aerial mapping type stuff if you get in with the right crowd. The photographies can be really good, commercial photography.
Oh, really?
So you just have to get a window, and if you get a camera mount set up in your plane, and then you work with like real estate developers who need to take pictures of land, that can actually work pretty well. I know we were emailing a guy about that. He said he was doing, you know, you see all the ads for that shit, but he said it was actually pretty.
I never thought I'd doing that.
Yeah, we had an idea. Cool. And for Alaska, single plane, single pilot operation, we were just talking about it. It really depends what you want to do. A Cub's a good way into like the lodge market, and you kind of have to start at the bottom. Start with the smallest plane. The Cub flying is probably some of the hardest flying the lodge pilots do, but it's also starting in at the easiest plane to repair. Be a way to put it.
It costs more than most.
They do, but you can bang them together yourself. Well, I mean, not obviously, and they can't really do that, but in theory you could.
Steve can.
Steve could, yeah, you're Steve an AMP. Mm-hmm. And who else is an AMP here? No?
No.
No? No. No. All right, just Steve. Cool. So there's a thought. I'll try to think. Actually, I'll go through the website, and I'll go through some of our thoughts and see if I can come up with something else. There might be some other ideas. Skydiving. There's some drop zones in Alaska.
You don't need a 135 for that.
You don't. You're done. The aerial photography, you do. There's an aerial mapping outfit that used to be based. They have a base in Anchorage. I'll dig them up. They usually fly twins, but they might be their main base is down south.
Aerometric.
Yeah, aerometric. Yep.
The skydiving 91.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're not. You're
not going A to B.
Yeah. And, you know, it's incidental to being dropped off. It's not, you're not buying transportation.
A seat.
Yeah.
Right.
135 is intended for marketing of transportation.
And the FAA's really tried to stay out of skydiving. They don't want anything to do with it. They got the United States Parachute Association kind of, which is a private organization, kind of governs the skydivers. And that does tie into the planes to some degree. It's not, you know, federally mandated, obviously, but it does, you know, it does affect them to some degree. They've got regs for skydiving. It's mainly about how to drop people out of your plane without hitting somebody else. And if you do let skydivers out and they hit another plane or hurt anybody, the pilot of the plane flying skydiver will be held responsible, even if it really wasn't their fault.
Was it you telling me that story? The divers into the clouds and then the new rule?
Oh, no, I've got a bunch of stuff. I mean, there are a few stories like that. One is in the Northeast, near a drop zone, the pilot did all the right calls, put a skydiver out, and they hit a Cherokee 6 or something. And the Cherokee 6, I think, believe crashed, and the pilot was held responsible, even though he'd made all the right calls and done everything right. So a lot of freedom in the skydiving world as a pilot, but there is actually responsibility. You do need to look out and have your jump master or one of the jumpers should be aware and looking out as well.
Is it legal to drop skydivers through overcast?
No. Somebody told me that was what the story was that made the rule no more jumping through clouds. Something happened. I can't remember the whole story. I don't guess it was you.
No.
Somebody else was telling me.
I've jumped through clouds.
Mm-hmm.
But and again, it's the pilot's fault. The skydiver's not licensed by the FAA. They can't do anything to the skydiver. Plus, they're probably dead.
Yeah. You're pretty exposed at that point.
Whether it's a good idea to jump through a cloud is a whole nother... It depends on the ceiling. There are a lot of... We don't have to go into that. Works in St. Mary's, though. Let's see, this one's a more general question, and we don't have enough information from the person asking it to really give them a super accurate answer. It's an international one. It's from a pilot in the Czech Republic. They hold a license for planes and helicopters, and they're interested in flying in difficult areas. They have experience with telecommunication, security, etc. You know, until I know what flight time you have, it's hard to point anything out. If you want difficult areas and you're from Europe, I'd recommend Africa. This even sounds kind of weird, but Afghanistan, there's some startup airlines there. They were hiring a lot of Russians and Ukrainian pilots, but the Russian planes are a lot cheaper to get, and the Russians know how to fly their own planes, the Anatovs and stuff like that. So I would recommend, you know, looking at the more third world countries, Africa is a really good spot. The other thought would be maybe corporate flying. But I don't have quite enough information there to give a really good
answer. I've
heard
flying in New Guinea is quite difficult.
Actually, I've done a lot of looking into that. Yeah, they do hire people. They are Europeans. They pay very well. You're going to need probably 1,000 hours, and you would do well to have, I know a lot of European companies get a type rating for each plane. So the PAC 750 they fly, which we have a video on Oddball Pilot, and the Islanders are pretty popular, as well as Platus Porters, but that's getting into the higher-end stuff.
What's the low-wing single-engine turbine?
PAC 750.
PAC 750.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I've heard that it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of them down there.
They do. I was looking into a job flying over there, and that's what held me up. I didn't have any PAC 750 time. And you need time in the plane they have, because you need a rating for every single plane. Like in the U.S., you get a single-engine rating, which covers all single-engine. Over there, it's each plane you get a separate license for.
Is it like a checkout, or is it?
It's actually a license. It's more like a type. It's like a type rating. Hmm. So you have to know the gross weight. So that was kind of for me. This one I think could hit everybody. It's a Marine with a pilot with 1,300 hours total, 900 of which are on the MV the Osprey, the MV V-22 at the Osprey. I think it is. Plenty of PIC time and looking to start a new kind of flying career, bush type flying outside the U.S. Okay.
That's considered Okanos.
Alaska is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Alaska counts outside the U.S.?
Yeah. It's an overseas tour.
Oh, fantastic. That's, we got our, were you in the military too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were in the Army.
Air Force.
We got a guy from the Air Force, a guy from the Army, Navy, and I was a Marine. Anyone else?
Yeah, it's
yeah, we covered the Air Lance and Coast Guard.
Oh. They don't count.
Although I thought it would be great to be a rescue swimmer.
Yeah, it would be cool.
That's what I should have done. That would have been awesome.
I think Coast Guard would have been my second if I would go back. Because
they be pretty.
They do stuff all the time.
Well, they did because I worked on helicopters, and they do the same thing. It's just you don't do the long deployments.
Oh yeah.
So it would be
get stationed in San Diego or something. Mm-hmm.
So you know, we got a bunch of ex-military people. Everybody's flying now. None of us flew in the military.
No.
So this somebody with some flight time. He's looking for schools and type of aircraft to get into.
What's his license?
Well, he's probably still got a military license. He doesn't say, but it's not too hard to convert it to a civilian license, is it? Anyone looked into that?
Sounds like it's not hard.
Just take the check rights.
Yeah, it should go easily.
It sounds like his category is power lift.
You're right. If it's the Osprey.
He does not have an airplane license.
Oh, so the first thing to do...
is get an airplane license.
Well, he's got 900 in the Osprey, so he probably has...
Which one, helicopter or rotorcraft?
Yeah,
Or rotorcraft or airplane.
He doesn't say so.
Oh, that's the one that tilts.
It's got to be. The V-22 is the Osprey. The MV must be a fancier version. So the first thing to do to find out what type of license you have, if it's a helicopter, if it's a rotorcraft, it's one path. If it's fixed wing, it's another path. So get back to us with that info. I think there are options. Just send us another comment, and I'd like to get back to you being an ex former Marine myself. And I'll try to get you an email on that one, so we don't have a good answer. So the next question ties into what we did today, which is awesome. Someone who's curious about wildlife survey pilot jobs, and if we either have an interview or archives, or if we plan to do one. Just did an interview today. Literally sat down with the chief pilot of Clearwater Aviation. They do marine mammal surveys, and I used to fly with him up in Barrow. So we talked about his career and about flying for Clearwater, marine mammal flying, and then we got a little video of his plane. So you have private contractors up in Alaska. The big ones are Clearwater and Bald Mountain Air. Bald Mountain flies a Twin Otter, and Clearwater flies a Scout on floats, and they have two commanders. They use turbine commanders. Other than that, the other type of jobs you can do with that are BLM, Fish and Wildlife, not BLM, Fish and Wildlife, Fish and Game, so more government jobs. Cali, doing that.
Are they going to be sequestered out of existence shortly?
They might be. Yeah, they'll be back.
I don't know.
I think Cali's...
I don't know how we can keep spending money.
Cali's... they're talking to Cali about getting helicopters. So, who knows? But so the NOAA also does, and there we've got an interview with a NOAA pilot. It was our first interview we ever did, and I'd recommend you go back, listen to that interview. So NOAA, Fish and Game, which is state of Alaska. I don't know about the lower 48 states. Fish and Wildlife, which is federal. And then you do have private contractors. Those are the two up here, but there are definitely some down south. And I'll do a little more research into that. But we'll get this interview up there at some point in the hopefully near future.
What about the forest fires?
Forest fire?
Yeah, is that through the Forest Service or...?
The fire bomber type flying?
Yeah.
Or the that one's I've looked...
Jobs.
Yeah, those are... You can get them, actually. We do have an interview with the man who is the chief pilot of Butler Aviation. It's a short interview, and we're going to try to... We're kind of working on it right now.
Out of where?
Out of Redmond, Oregon. Mm. And Butler flies DC-7s or DC-6s, and they're limited to, I think, Oregon, Washington, the Northwest. The feds won't hire the reciprocating... Actually, that's not quite true. They won't use the DC-6s anymore. So what I get, the big private contractors for U.S. flying are Butler. It's pretty big. Neptune Aviation's huge. They're out of Missoula. I was just down there.
Aero Union?
Aero Union's out. They're done.
They're done?
They were flying Hercs, and they grounded all the Hercs.
That was the one with the
Orions?
The Orions they grounded as well, yeah. I don't remember if they... but there's another one in Minden Air, which is flying out of Minden, Nevada, which is near Reno. And that's the problem, is like Neptune's flying the P-2Vs, I think they are. They're old bombers, radials. Mm. With little jet engines on the end that run off avgas, so they catch on fire a lot.
I think they convert them to turbines, though.
No, they haven't. You're thinking of the P2, which state of California is flying. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the firefighting thing gets confusing. You've got those three big operators, another one that's flying DC-10s. I don't know how much business they're getting. They're huge. I mean, a huge plane. Neptune's probably the largest, followed by Minden and Butler, about the same. Aero Union's gone. The plane that both of those outfits, Neptune and Minden, are looking at, that BAE-146, that little four-engine jet, that it's good slow flight characteristics. And they're last time I talked to them, they're still working on the dump system, and there are some issues, but that was last year.
I looked into it quite a few years ago. There was about 50 firefighting aircraft total. There was... one or two crashes a year are usually fatal.
Yeah.
And it's not very good odds.
It's usually one for those three contractors. The pay is good. Andy, the man who owns Clearwater that we were just talking about, he flew for Neptune for a season. Mm. I talked to him quite a bit about it. The other way to do it, the firefighting, is like the state of California has a really big department.
That's probably the safest.
And yeah, it's going to be, and like Patty Wagstaff's flying for him now. We're talking about aerobatics. Yeah, she got a job there, which is kind of cool. and they evidently grilled her about the aerobatic flying. They're like, this is not aerobatic flying. We don't want you out there winging around. She had to work her way into the job, which you think you're Patty Wagstaff. Come on, guys.
She actually started in Alaska a little bit.
Did she?
Bethel. She came out there and they got stuck in a float plane on some river bar or something.
In Bethel.
And some story like that.
Cool, I'll have to look that into that.
Had enough of it right away.
Yeah, go back to an extra 300 and be more fun. So that's, and they also, states will contract out with crop dusters. Like the air tractor, air boss is really good. And they'll do, because they don't have to have people on call all the time. They can just contract them for specific fires. So that's another way into the firefighting business. The interesting thing I got out of it, I always figured they wanted to hire crop duster pilots because you're, you know, spraying similar background. And I heard it from a couple people that that is not always who they want because the fires are in the mountains and the crop duster pilots are generally flying the flatlands. So it's a very different skill set. The only thing in common is that you're dropping stuff out of the airplane. Martin Mars, by the way, in British Columbia, the Canadians have a cool firefighting system, but the Martin Mars big four-engine seaplane that they're still fighting fires with.
Yeah, that thing is massive.
That thing is awesome. Yeah.
Is that in Red Deer? Or Calgary or somewhere?
It's in British Columbia. In
Vancouver or someplace like that.
Yeah. Because
it's massive. It'd take like the ocean to get off the ground.
It's huge. Yeah. But basically, by the time they get there, they're in Japan. Then they refuel, they tack it back.
Yeah, you need a big lake.
It's a spruce goose. Anyway, we kind of wandered off that question quite a bit. But there are a lot of options for, and there's flying smoke jumpers, something I've been looking into quite a bit as well. And that's another way you can do that for U.S. Forest Service or BLM.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these jobs, just one thing to keep in mind, you don't actually fly that much. You average about 200 to 300 hours a year. So it's when you're flying, it's really cool, but there's not that much of it. Whereas when you're flying air taxi, the flying's...
And do we really want forest fires?
Sometimes, that's a whole other debate.
Are we praying for forest fires to happen now so we can go...
Well, I think we only fight them when they're threatening life or property. So that's
let a lot of them burn.
That's the catch-all. There's some deals in Alaska where part of, I think, the whole Native Land Club Settlement Act, I don't know where it falls in there, so I'm totally going to misspeak this probably... tell this wrong, but in Alaska you'll get more of it for small cabins. It's kind of part of the deals we've made, depending if it's on what type of land it's on. And so that
they drop the smoke jumpers in there and they'll try to protect the cabin and let it keep burning
around it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
They did that at the cabin. A cabin I had once out at Angel Creek Lodge behind there.
Cool.
They saved sort of. Yeah, they moved all my firewood. Yeah, they saved it.
You had to go back in the fall and move all your firewood.
God dang it. I was all stacking it nice, but it's too close to the
bastard.
House.
All right. Well, moving on. That started as a wildlife survey pilot. We kind of got off track a little bit. So the next one, this is directly for you guys. Does AERA hire non-U.S. citizens? Somebody with, say, 3,500 hours and an FAA ATP.
Yeah.
Magnus is not.
Yeah.
Magnus. He has a visa.
He's got
work visa.
He got a, yeah, there are all
the
Italians.
Italian,
yeah.
Remember?
Just,
they're on
Gabriel.
The network.
Gabriel.
And
Gabriel's actually a citizen.
And Magnus.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he actually got that visa. It was the lottery, so he ended up.
Okay.
He got millions. He randomly got it. And then, yeah, Gianluca's.
The lottery out in visas.
Well, the
Ben's got a new idea,
and that's actually the big point. Is I think AERA, anyone up here will hire a non-U.S. citizen, but you need a work permit. That's what gets you. So it's a federal work permit that you have to acquire, and nobody's really going to work too hard with you because there are enough U.S. pilots. So that's the easy answer. We've had that question before, but that's the you need the work permit, which is tough. A 406 question involving well, it's not quite up your line there, Tex, but
no,
it's
getting
there.
Over to Steve.
Okay, yeah, well, that's right. You've moved on.
Over Steve.
Right. So it's a 406 pilot based in the UK, and they also have a bunch of other twin Cessna time and some twin Piper time. Just wondering about where their 406 jobs. There are a few here in Alaska, but really it's not that many. You guys have four 406s now?
Three that operate.
Okay. You got 1 foot.
And they're up
new.
For sale, and they're not checking people out.
Okay.
Because who knows?
It's just the parts are hard to find for them. I know from BSSD it's getting more difficult to operate them. Being from the UK as well, Africa's always a good bet. Tanzania, I know they have them there. We've got that interview with Tanzanair, and they like them quite a bit. I just spoke to a guy today who brokers airplanes, and he got a call from a company in Angola who's trying to sell a 406. So you see a lot of 406s in Africa, not just Tanzania, but there's a good tourist market in Tanzania. So Tanzania, Kenya, which can be hard to get hired as a non-Kenyan, probably help if you're a Brit. I guess Angola's got a couple, is what it sounds like. Well, I'd be making stuff up and going beyond that. I've got a few ideas, but I don't have any hard facts. So I would look for
some
Africa.
In South America, too?
There might be a few. I'm not sure how easy it is to go fly in South America. I've just passed through a few times, and I haven't seen a lot of foreign nationals flying. So the best thing I can say for 406 is go to Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, preferably. So
I heard the Reims was starting up, like remaking 406.
You can custom order them.
Mm.
Brand new one.
Yeah, you get a brand new one, but they're expensive, and it supports the problem. You can get parts, but it's going to take a long time and cost a lot of money.
Mm.
So. That's the hang up with 406. It's an awesome airplane. I love them. All right, another one, a fellow's mid 20s, an FAA license, building time, anything. Yeah, looking for advice or job opportunity. Well, with Oddball Pilot, we don't have any airplanes. advice we do have. I'm going to guess you're in the U.S. because you've got an FAA license, and I think the places to start are flying skydivers, towing banners, flight instructing, obviously.
SIC here.
Right seat with a company in Alaska like ERA.
It's commercial instrument.
You're seeing more of that. Actually, like Kenmore Air Harbor hires right seaters for their caravans. They've got Kenmore Air Express. So you're starting to see more of that. And there's movement in the entire industry right now. It's actually a good time to be getting into it because things are opening up slowly. So that's probably the best advice I have.
I only had $200, just over $200.
And you got on. Well, this ERA right seat program's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a good opportunity. So that is good. Here's a more fun one. Somebody wants to come fly up here. They need about 100 hours to get the commercial, and they want to know what kind of airplane to buy. Leaning towards a tail dragger, a 140 or a Luscombe, that's a Cessna 140.
Steve's got one for sale.
Oh, really? 140?
Luscombe.
You've got a Luscombe?
I do have a Luscombe.
Did we talk about that? I owned a Luscombe for a while.
I actually have your old Luscombe.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But that's not the one that flies.
That's a...
The problem with the Luscombe is it's worth maybe $15,000. And I've got about 30,000.
Oh, yeah. So it's nice.
No, it's not even that nice.
It's nice. Steve built it.
Mine was pretty darn nice before it did its little flip on the river. Mm. That wasn't me, by the way. So to build time, so they're wondering if they should focus on an IFR plane like a 172, something that gets my IFR time in, or a tail dragger like a Luscombe or 140, which would be cheaper. And
just
more
to get
fun.
That initial flight training.
Yeah, get that. Yep, build that first chunk of time. And
I don't think it would really even matter.
They're still
really.
Mm-hmm.
the advantage of the small tail dragger, you're probably going to become a better stick and rudder pilot.
Mm-hmm.
True.
They're a lot cheaper to buy, and they're a lot cheaper to operate.
Funner.
And they're more fun.
Yes.
Yes.
More fun.
More what?
More fun.
Funner. If you're interested, I'm actually going to try to put together a book review on a guy named this guy named Burke Meese. He's an Alaskan airline captain. He wrote a book called The Lost Art, which is a really kind of cool book on tail dragger instruction. And he obviously had a Luscombe, although I hear he just bought a 140. Ross Nixon knows him pretty well.
Hmm. Oh, Bert, I've met him here. No,
yeah, he's cool.
He's a
he flew the goose for Penny.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm.
Yep, yep.
Because he came over and visited Ross, and he's got like the.
Yeah. This book's really good. So if you're interested in tail draggers, his name is Burke Meese. It's B-U-R-K-E-M-E-E-S, and he's got a website. You can Google him, and I believe you can actually purchase this book on his website.
And those,
and it's awesome.
But flying in Talkeetna, they are always looking for tail wheel pilots.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you want to do like the mountain flying out of Talkeetna, they hire almost every year.
Mm-hmm.
So
somebody there hires one or two jobs every year.
You need to kind of go talk to them beforehand to get in. They do hire low time, not 200 hours low, but they'll hire 500-600 hours and keep an eye on you. There's some really good operators in Talkeetna. We've got an interview with Paul Roderick, who owns Talkeetna Air Taxi. So if you're interested in that, that's where I would start looking into that work. And then you also have K2. And
I've been pretty fun working out there, too. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a cool town.
You worked out there.
I did.
Summer or two, right?
I did a summer there, and I've been there for climbing, for
mm-hmm.
hanging out.
They only want 500-600 hours?
Well, they want more than that. But if they know you, you're a known quantity, they'll hire you lower time, but you're going to be in the 185, and you're going to be on a very tight leash. Very tight.
My friend got on.
As you should.
With,
as you should
be. 400 hours of tailwheel.
Okay.
And I don't know. Close to 1,500 hours or so. He needed the 400 hours of tailwheel before they
move on. And that's where the advantage of buying a tail dragger, if you need a job that requires...
If you need tail dragger time, you got it. Then.
Everybody is 172 time. So I don't know if that really helps. If cost is a factor, the Luscombe, I had a 65-horsepower Luscombe. It burned 4 gallons an hour.
Or
172.
Tea
crates are great.
JT Cubs, those are cheap.
Yep, those are, yeah.
Still can't afford them.
Luscombe's are pretty, that Luscombe was fun. I like my Luscombe. So I don't know if that helped or not, but.
Have it back.
It's not mine anymore. I sold it to Callie. How's it look these days?
It's kind of munched.
Big pile.
It's a big pile.
We had one question, and I have it down here, so I'm going to touch on it. A guy running an airline out of Honduras, and I'll get back to you with an email. I've been thinking about some various thoughts. I don't know if I have a good answer for you. I'll get back to you with an email. So onwards. Another gentleman, he's a little bit older, lives in the Netherlands, and he was a boat captain on ocean-going sea ships, which is awesome. He's looking into getting into flying. I'm guessing he has some money saved up, and he's wondering what the chances of like becoming a bush pilot or a flight instructor in the U.S. are. I'd say the age isn't an issue. The background, driving ships is cool. Again, it's the work permit. That's mm-hmm. what's going to hold you up. I mean, you guys have definitely hired lower time folks who are in their 50s.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. 60. So. Mm-hmm.
So it's possible what happens.
Principal Bill?
Principal Bill is 60-something.
Retired Principal Bill?
Yeah.
Decided he wanted to fly for a while?
Cool.
And he did.
That was was it his first day or the... No, he was just going on a ride-along, and he got to experience an engine out in a caravan with Brian Ahmed.
Oh, yeah.
On his ride-along.
Yeah. That was a good engine out.
Yeah.
I mean, Brian had a nice lake and did perfect.
Mm. Excellent job.
He did, yeah.
Principal Bill.
So, I mean, I wish I had a better answer for this gentleman. I would say bush flying in the U.S., you need the work permit. If you can acquire that, you got a shot. If not, I'd recommend Africa as well if you want more adventures flying. Again, Tanzania, Kenya. South Africa is tougher, but there are more South African pilots. But the, and there's more than there's a there are a couple other countries that are really good over in Africa to go work for. And I'll try to put up something on it.
I jump seated on Everett's the other day. They have a waiver. They can hire people to be flight engineers. Absolutely zero aviation experience. You don't need a mechanic certificate. You don't need flight ratings. You do have to take the training and pass it all.
Right.
The written test. But
you, it'd be perfect for somebody who wanted to fly and
yeah, get your way in, and you don't have a big investment.
I will follow up on that. I'll call the chief pilot there at Everett's and ask him about that.
And they need people. They had that day that I was jump seating out. He had two people quit.
They're like, hey, can you sit in the
Can you find here? That's when he came up. You know anybody that needs a job?
Was it Jeremy came up?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to call Jeremy up. Yeah, I'll call him. I'll give him a call this week and see what I can find out about that. But that's kind of cool.
They were just starting a class of seven, and he said he's looking to put another class together or at least five more.
I will call him up tomorrow. I'd like to put something up and see what they're looking for.
And he said you could hire a homeless guy on the street if they have the aptitude. He'll give him a shot.
Well, they just bought an MD-80.
Really?
Yeah, so they've got their DC-9s, their DC-6s, their C-46s, and an MD-80.
They are in pretty serious training mode, trying to get everybody upgraded into that jet.
Yeah. I'll see if I can get. I mean, Everett's was a lot of fun. I'll see what I can dig up on that this week, and I'll try to get something up on the website or certainly on the network about what's going on.
with these. Guys outside the U.S. trying to fly, is China an option?
No.
At all?
No. China's got their own pilots.
They're pretty short-handed.
Well, I take that back. There's a guy that used to fly in Bethel for Hagland, and I've been emailing him. He's on the network, but he went and flew air ambulance in China. Low-time guys, China's, I don't think, an option. I think you need some experience, and you go over, and they will pay well. And he's moved on. He's actually flying in the Middle East now, which is cool. Corporate job. So you should look him up on the network. It's actually.
Did he go to... Yeah, don't matter.
No, he's not doing super secret stuff. It's just some rich businessman.
That China was buying more business jets than anywhere else in the world right now.
And caravans? Lots of caravans. Yeah, I've got a bunch of friends who have ferried planes over there.
And then Russia...
Are they buying them new?
From Wichita.
I thought your dad had some competition there for a while. Making up caravans.
No, and well...
It's all the useless.
Well, one guy I know delivered a plane over there. He's talking to him. They're like, well, we don't really have any work for it yet, but, you know, we want to pick it up now while we can. And so they just sort of have...
Kind of like the cities are building.
Yes. China's...
They're not only building cities, they're building the airports that they don't need.
Exactly. Yeah, lots of things. They have these manufactured buildings. They can build a skyscraper. They could ship one in here and build it in like 10 days.
Yeah, you
with no codes or anything.
Well, they're all you just plug them together and bolt them, and they're all manufactured.
Yeah, I won't get into too much of a political conversation about China, but I've spent a lot of time there climbing, and it's pretty awesome what they do. But some of the stuff is built very quickly, and you're kind of like, huh, I wonder how
they may not be the best engineers.
Well, no, I think they definitely picked up something. It depends where they're building it and what they're doing it for. And I was like way out in the boonies where they were building roads that you're kind of like, you just know it's going to get washed out. And they're like, oh, we just put 100 people on it, and they pile some more gravel in there, it'll fix it. But they are. They're kind of booming, and their aviation department's growing. Aviation in China is growing rapidly. And it'll be interesting to see where they go with it. It's tough to get permits to fly around in China. So I'd love to go ferry one over there and see how it works.
There was another guy that I was talking to. In Russia, there's lots of pilot jobs. Of course, it's not a low-time deal. You have to have time in the airplanes and stuff.
Right.
But they're paying well.
That's good, because a lot of Russian pilots also get farmed out overseas. A lot of humanitarian aid groups use Russian planes and pilots because they're inexpensive. That may be drying up. A lot of that was the excess, you know, extra planes they had from the whole Cold War era. And a lot of their pilots were, a lot of them seemed older from that kind of era, too. And that might be, maybe that market's drying up.
Probably haven't trained much from the last 10 years.
They do a lot of, the Ukraine, ton of flight training.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of, like the U.S., people from Nepal, for one, and Africa, they'll go to the Ukraine and get all their licenses. And then they convert them to whatever their country's license is.
It's cheaper there.
Yeah, South Africa, the U.S., and the Ukraine are hot spots for training pilots.
Well, the U.S., you have to have hire an attorney, an immigration attorney, to even think about it nowadays.
Yeah, there are a lot of Nepalese students doing training in Texas. And it used to be, I don't know if it was like JAL, used to have contracts over here. So.
Yeah, the JAL closed up.
Did it? Okay.
Didn't your folks do that?
My dad flew for JAL.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. For the contract company.
Doing the training?
Mm-hmm.
That was down in near San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to fuel them, and I was learning how to fly in Eugene. They'd fly up and King
Airs. All closed up.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, my dad there was 20-some-odd years. Yeah, 30, 20? 20 years old. Any rate, that's all the questions we had. So, anyone else have any other thoughts, comments? Anyone we didn't get to? I'll look back through questions, see if we missed anything, and I'll try to get an email out to you, or we'll hit you next time we come around with our question and answers. So, Aiden with Oddball Pilot, we'll sign on off. Thanks, guys, for helping out.